It's a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll take a look at the Heat's win against the Pistons over the weekend and how it impacts the Eastern Conference playoff picture.
And after a special patron supporter mailbag, we'll talk to Heat legend Tim Hardaway about his memories in Miami this season and much more. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberger. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ermill, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DVermill13.
After the Heat lost to the Lakers last week, David, we talked about going into that Detroit Pistons game on Saturday and how that Pistons game was probably the most important game of the season for Miami, just based on what was at stake as far as the Eastern Conference playoff standings were regarded. And the Heat went into that game and really took care of business, beating the Pistons 105-96. It was close for a little bit, but they really did pull away there in the second half and in the fourth quarter. Miami just looked like the better team. And look, that's good, because at this point they need to start winning these games against playoff type contenders and in order to kind of win these tiebreakers and better their own playoff positioning. And they had a 3-game lead against the Pistons going into that game, as far as having the eighth seed was considered, and losing that game would have shifted not only the tiebreaker to the Pistons, but also would have narrowed that gap substantially. But rather, now the Heat win that game, they expand their gap between the eighth and the ninth spot in the East to 4 games. They win the tiebreaker, and they look like they're in a strong position to basically make the playoffs, right? And you get the sense that that game, there was an intensity to it, especially in the beginning. You get a sense in that game that the Pistons are basically done, right? Like, and I think that the top 8 seeds in the East are, barring anything crazy happening, the top 8, the 8 spots in the playoffs from the East, I think, is basically decided. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a general feeling around the league that this is the 8 teams in the East are going to be the 8 teams that represent the East. So currently, as far as the standings are concerned, and look, you know, Miami did what they had to do. I don't know if there was necessary still that sense of urgency, considering they had a couple of days rest there. And moreover, this Detroit Pistons team just didn't look very good. I mean, they're on the second night of a back-to-back, having played Friday night against Orlando. Miami shouldn't have allowed that team to kind of claw back the way they did in the third and fourth quarter. So it's unfortunate that they were, you know, they squandered a big lead that they had allowed, or that they had, you know, mounted in the second quarter. But they still took care of business. Looking at the positive side of things, they did get the job done. They were at home. That's something they couldn't do against the Lakers. So I guess this is a step up. So now it's about continuing to build on those good habits. It was a really nice game from an offensive perspective, because there was such a balanced attack there. So hopefully this will be the first step of many, of maybe even climbing deeper into the standings. You know, the Milwaukee Bucks have struggled a bit of late, so maybe trying to get past them into the sixth seed, or maybe even higher than that, if possible, is definitely a possibility. And it's just something to look forward to.
The Heat are right now a half game behind the Bucks, who, going into Sunday night's game versus Philly, we're recording this on a Sunday afternoon here before that game happened, but they've lost 4 straight games going into that game versus the 76ers. We'll see what happens with that. And they're 2 games out of 6th place, so behind the 76ers. So they're there, right? Like, Miami could realistically move up as far as 6. I don't know if 5 is doable. They're 2.5 games back, I believe, from the Pacers right now. But hey, I mean, I guess anything's possible at this point. I don't know if there's that much of a talent gap between teams 5 through 8 at this point in the East.
Could the team go on a 20-game win streak and go all the way to 3rd?
Probably not. Do you think? I don't think so. But look, hey, that game against the Pistons would be the formula to do it, right? I mean, there is no star player in Miami. We'll talk about that idea in general a little bit later when we get to our mailbag. But there's no star player in Miami right now. And that game against the Pistons shows how they're going to win, how they're going to win games down the stretch and then going into the postseason. There was eight players with eight or more points. Six of them were in double digits. Justice Winslow in particular, I sort of want to highlight him a little bit. We're not doing the full recap like we usually do because it was a weekend game. But if I had a spotlight player, it would be Justice Winslow. I was reading this piece by Anthony Chang in the Palm Beach Post, friend of the show, Anthony Chang, this morning before we started recording. And he had this stat out there in his story. He said that Justice Winslow is shooting 12 of 18 or 66.7% in the paint over the past four games compared to 45.1% before that throughout the season. So, look, I think Heat fans are well aware that Justice Winslow has struggled to finish at the rim, and he's – the difference right now, I think, with Winslow's game, he's in the last four games, he's scored a season high 17 points twice. He really seems to be in a rhythm right now, and that's something to watch and something to monitor if you're a Heat fan. If he continues to convert at the rim, he's shooting better from three-point range. I think he's 6 of 11 in the last four games. So it's a small sample, but he is shooting better. But he's had streaks here and there, and that's going to I feel like that's always going to happen with Justice Winslow, who's not a natural shooter. He'll be good, and he'll be bad, and that's most players in the NBA from three-point range. But as far as finishing around the rim, he needs to be consistent from there. So again, something to monitor for Heat fans, because he's always been able to get to the rim. It's just a matter of converting on the field goal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, having covered the Pistons on Friday when they were in Orlando and looking at a player with whom Justice is compared to a lot, and that's Stanley Johnson, who was chosen eighth overall in that same draft 2015 as Justice was taken. I can say that Justice Winslow isn't as bad as some people would like to make him be. Stanley Johnson is a player who is kind of like a Justice Winslow light in the sense that he does, he can do a lot of things. He just doesn't do any of them particularly well. And his shooting is even worse than Justice Winslow. Like, I was watching him and shoot around, got a chance to talk with him, and it was unbelievable to see him go through those mechanics. And he admits it. He told me, you know, he's fully aware that his shooting is a problem. But his mechanics, he would change his hands every time. And his coaches, as they were feeding him the ball, kept saying, hands, 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 because his shooting mechanics are so horrific. He changes them every time. Every shot is completely different than the one before. So for a guy like Winslow to show this progress, I think we're seeing steps in the right direction. That finishing around the paint, certainly a big step up considering how bad we saw moments like that. But he seems more fluid. I forget what play it was against the Pistons. I think it was in the third quarter where he put the ball down and kind of swooped in towards the rim, kind of a la Josh Richardson. And it looked really, really polished. That's something we haven't seen as part of Justice's game. I think the ability's there. There's certainly a comfort level ball handling. His defense certainly is still top notch. So I think we've definitely got a better pick overall than Stanley Johnson. But to say he's also been showing improvement lately, I think he's going to be an important piece of Miami's playoff picture.
In that same piece that Chang wrote, he talked of Kelly Olynyk, and Olynyk brought up a good point, right? It's not like, look, Justice Winslow doesn't have just one job. He's not somebody that needs to come in and just rebound the ball, right? He's asked to handle the ball, set screens, shoot threes, space the floor, rebound. He's asked to get steals on defense and often take the most difficult defensive assignment in the game. He's asked to do a lot of things, so it's really hard for somebody who's still only 3 years into the league to do all those things and do all those things well. And because he's the 10th pick in the draft, there's a spotlight on him and there's a certain expectations that comes along with that. I do want to point out, though, in that game against Detroit, before we move on to our mailbag here, we had been talking a lot on this show about the effect of Dwayne Wade, specifically on how that's going to impact Justice Winslow, who was basically the backup point guard before Wade came on board. And now Wade is essentially the backup point guard. And that's taken the ball out of Justice Winslow's hands. Eric Spoelstra introduced a really interesting wrinkle in that Pistons game that I just wanted to point out, using Justice Winslow as a screener for Dwayne Wade. And then Dwayne Wade hitting, and there was a play in the third quarter, I want to say, maybe fourth quarter, where Wade got the screen from Winslow, right? So Winslow sets the screen and then dives towards the rim like a typical pick and roll. And because Wade has such a good feel for facilitating on the pick and roll, gets Winslow the ball in transition, and then Winslow immediately kicks it out to a teammate for an open three. That that is a huge development if that's something that's going to consistently happen, because that's the sort of thing that the Warriors do with Draymond Green. That's how you get a guy like Justice Winslow, who's not a natural ball handler or like a primary ball handler, I should say. That's how you, but he's a very, very good secondary ball handler who's very versatile and can do a lot of things and be on the court in a lot of different places. That's how you get a guy like Winslow involved. And if Wade is still going to be your primary ball handler on that second unit, and if Dragic is going to continue to be the primary ball handler on the first unit, and depending on where you're, if you're starting Winslow or bringing him off the bench like he did against Detroit, you can use him in that same set regardless of who he's paired up with, and get, and let him set a good screen, dive to the rim, and either finish around the basket if he's still doing it at this efficient rate, or kick out to guys like Rodney Magruder, Luke Babbitt, or Wayne Ellington along the wings. And that could be, that could be a really big development for Justice Winslow as far as getting the ball in his hands, which we know he thrives with, you know?
Right. Look, I mean, one more point about Winslow, I think, before we move on. You know, somebody brought this up on a mailbag, I want to say a couple months ago, but how, maybe it was a little later than that. But anyway, the point being that the perception of Winslow is certainly damaged by how much he's expected to do. And I think that draft selection, his place in the draft as a lottery pick, certainly adds to that. But if this was a team with a superstar player, I think we'd all be very happy with Justice's progress. The fact that he can do so many things so well, even if he's not necessarily specializing in anything, he's a talented defender. He's a good ball handler, even if it's in a secondary role, like you pointed out. He can do multiple things offensively, and his shooting has improved. So given that, there are definite improvements there. So we shouldn't necessarily be down on him. He's just embracing his best role in the NBA, which is probably to be a complementary role player. And that's fine. Everybody in the league has to have a place in the hierarchy. You can't all expect, you know, to players to become superstars in this league. Somebody has to do the dirty work, and that's a guy like Winslow.
He didn't win a championship in the Big Three era until they got Shane Battier. You need players like that to win.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about 2006, James Posey. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've had guys like that throughout the team's history. I mean,
they're important. Before we move on to our mailbag and the Tim Hardaway conversation, just we will looking up to the next game. The Heat play the Phoenix Suns on Monday night. By the time you're listening to this tonight, at 7:30, and we will have a recap for that on Tuesday morning. But before we move on to our Patreon supporter exclusive mailbag, quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA, which has revamped its format. In addition to hosting Locked On Heat on a daily basis, David and I will be hosting Locked On NBA every Tuesday. It'll be a digestible show, just 20 to 30 minutes long, delivering the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day.
We've only done a couple of these, and they've been so much fun. You know, just like Locked On Heat is your daily briefing and all things Miami Heat related, Locked On NBA is your first stop for the most important headlines and analysis from around the league, so you can catch up on what's going on with the top 29 other teams in the league. Leave us a review in iTunes, and please make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcasting app.
So we're introducing a new wrinkle to the mailbag this week. We're going to do a Patreon supporter exclusive mailbag. We're going to try to do this about once a month going forward. So basically, we go into our Patreon page here. We look at our messages that we have coming in. And look, we ask our Locked On Heat Board of Advisors for their questions that they want answered, and they're basically guaranteed for us to answer them. They go right up to the top of the queue. So we've got nothing, but we've got three questions, and they're all from Patreon supporters. And we really appreciate the support that you guys show for us. We use the donations that are sent in to improve the sound quality of the show with a software that we have to basically purchase on a monthly basis. And that this really helps us continue to improve the quality of the show and maintain the quality of the show. So let's get to our first one. It comes from Isaac, who writes in, "This team is basically just a placeholder until we get a star. You can't have a team with 10 to 12 guys expecting minutes. There has to be a rotation and roles clearly defined. We need a package 3 to 4 players to get one great player. Obviously, we've seen Jimmy Butler, Paul George, Kyrie Irving, others get moved. So other stars will become available. Who can or will it be? Who would work as a player as a deal we could realistically or possibly get?" So this is the conversation, you know, this is sort of the bigger conversation around this entire Heat season, is which one of these guys are keepers on the roster right now? Which one of these guys are prospects that you could potentially package together? And who in the league right now is going to get moved? And I think that there's a few obvious names that I think people are thinking of as possible stars who can get moved. I mean, you look at what's happening in Washington with John Wall. Does he force his way out of Washington? Kemba Walker, with what's going on in Charlotte, there's a new general manager who's probably going to be in place by next season, or by this summer, I should say. Do they try to move on from Kemba Walker, package Kemba with one of their larger salaries to sort of clear the books and hit the reset button? You look at Portland. That's always been an option, right? Because Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum doesn't work theoretically, even though I think it works on the court. It's been just fine for them. But do they try to move on from CJ McCollum and maybe pair a more complimentary piece next to Damian Lillard? And then, of course, there's Kawhi Leonard, who not only is he not unhappy with Jordan Brand, but he might also be unhappy with the San Antonio Spurs organization. He could be a free agent in 2019 if he doesn't sign a super extension this summer. So those, I think, are the names at the forefront. Did I miss anybody, David? Do you think any of those guys are realistic targets? Where are you on this?
I think they're all potentially realistic targets. And the thing is that things in the league can change very quickly. I mean, a year ago, I don't know that anyone expected Paul George to be moved, to be honest with you. Despite his free agency and everything else, everything that we were hearing publicly was that the team intended to re-sign him, and that, you know, that either they were going to take a chance and see if they could might lose him in free agency, but they felt like they couldn't. Look at Blake Griffin's situation this past summer. This summer, he's there being told that he's going to be a Clipper for life. 5 months later, he's on a plane to the Motor City in Detroit. So anything can happen. You never know if a player all of a sudden something shifts as far as the player's development is concerned, or whether or not the goals for a particular season change, and all of a sudden that team decides that they can't afford player X, whomever that might be. There's always a possibility that a player can get moved, no matter how large the contract. So we've seen that.
Would you say that like star players being on the move, even on a season-to-season basis, is more the norm than the exception at this point? I mean, just looking at, I mean, guys like Kevin Durant, Gordon Hayward, LeBron James, LaMarcus Aldridge was moved. I mean, the guys are moving all the time.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at a player who we're going to see in a couple of nights, Devin Booker. How much longer do you think he can tolerate the inefficiency of the Phoenix front office? Right. So they've made moves. They tried to bring in veterans like Tyson Chandler and Jared Dudley, who are going to add to that team's culture. They're still losing. They've missed on some draft choices, although it looks like Josh Jackson from this year's draft is improving. But, you know, he's going to put up these empty stats, and he hears the concerns about his numbers, that they might be the empty calories, that they, you know, he's putting up a lot of shots on a bad team with nobody else capable of scoring. How much longer before that starts to affect him? Now, obviously, they'll probably try. I don't know if he's been offered an extension, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, he's in that crop of stars from 2015 that is eligible for one.
Yeah, he'll be up for an extension this next season. And you know, Phoenix is going to pay him whatever it is, I think. But you're right, though. You look at Booker, and he might be somebody that even after signing that extension, I mean, that extension is going to pay him a whole lot more money. It's going to pay him in the realm of $20 million a year. So if he does sign that and he decides, he could still just say, I want out. You know, just like you said in the Blake Griffin thing, like signs that huge extension with the Clippers. And then, I mean, the Clippers decided to trade him. But, you know, just because you signed an extension doesn't mean you're not movable, especially if you're a good player like Devin, with upside like Devin Booker. It's the same. The Devin Booker situation that you're talking about is what everybody's sort of talking about with Anthony Davis in New Orleans. Right. So that could happen there too. Who knows? You're right. I mean, a star could get moved at any point. I think what if you're Miami, I'm not even sure you're concerned with who gets moved at this point or who's going to be available, but really your concern has to be, what do we have to offer? Because they weren't able to necessarily get into the Paul George sweepstakes. They didn't have the goods. And that was, you could argue partly that was because they didn't even have this roster signed. I mean, and I think people forget that. Like, there was nobody on this roster. It was all one-year contracts last year. They had nobody to trade under contract. So it was tough for them to sort of get involved in that sort of stuff around the draft. But looking forward, who on this roster can you package together? I think you look at something. We know that the Heat don't have draft picks. But you look at what the Thunder did for Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. They moved four players, no draft picks. And we're able to get Carmelo and we're able to get Paul George. Now, that's the sort of framework I think the Heat have to look at. And in those deals, you know, you move a Victor Oladipo and a Domantas Sabonis to Indiana, right? Two young prospects with some upside. Now, I think nobody thought Oladipo had as much upside as he did, even in that trade. So you're looking at somebody with, you know, somebody who can kind of a prospect and slash somebody who could sort of make an impact right away. So you start thinking of guys like, all right, can you package, I don't know, Bam Adebayo and Josh Richardson together and move that package, you know, for a mm-hmm. big player. And if you have to include another, like a Deion Waiters or a James Johnson salary to make it work, maybe that's what you have to do. That's the sort of package I think Miami has to be looking for. And if you're the Heat, and if you're Heat fans specifically, you might not want to hear Josh Richardson and Bam Adebayo getting moved. But if it means Kawhi Leonard's coming to Miami, I think that's the sort of deal you'd have to do.
Oh, I don't know. That's tough. It hurts to even consider that. I mean, not to say that Kawhi isn't a better singular player, but Josh, the combination of Josh and the tantalizing potential of Bam Adebayo.
That's what it would take, right? I mean, I don't want to debate whether it should or should not do it.
I hear you, I mean, you consider
the market price for Kawhi. Okay.
Yeah, but that's certainly the case. In lieu of, like you said, draft picks, you have to package together. And I think they even still included a pick, did they not, in order to acquire Paul George, taking a chance on them? They didn't?
No picks. Okay. There's no picks involved. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, Indiana got what they wanted. Obviously, they got an all-star to replace an all-star, so that worked out really well for both teams, you know.
And if you're,
excellent this season.
Great point, because if you're a team that has to, if you're the Spurs and you're forced to trade Kawhi, or if you're the Wizards and you're traded to force John Wall or whoever it might be, you might also be looking at the other side of that Indiana deal and saying, like, look, I don't want another lottery pick. I'd rather get a guy who's ready to break out right now.
Right, like, it could be a guy like Justice Winslow. I mean, you know,
It could be Richardson. It could be anybody.
Right. Yeah, it's all about fit across the league. The more I watch the league and the game itself, it's so much about fit. Yeah. All these guys have talent. Like, they have to take the work on themselves individually, without a doubt. But development, things of that sort, a lot of it has to do with fit, embracing a particular role, and having an opportunity for an even bigger role. So, you know, let's say Winslow goes over to a team that might be top heavy at the point and center position, maybe say like Minnesota. You know, he could be a guy like Jimmy Butler, and that he could take over, distribute the ball to players around the team, et cetera. You know, that's the way it works out, is that, you know, he has these skills. He just doesn't have the opportunity to showcase them on a nightly basis. And that's fine, because this team isn't built for that.
Let's get to our next question. Marcus writes in, do you think Josh Richardson has what it takes to be a star in the NBA, and will other stars want to play with him? Let's start with the first part. Do we think that he could be a star in the NBA? And based on – if you would have asked me this question, Marcus, in December, going into January, I would have said absolutely. Richardson was having his best stretch of the season at that point. He's fallen off a little bit since then. His scoring numbers specifically, his shooting percentages have fallen off quite a bit. But look, he's got that star. I feel like he's got that aggressive star mentality. We talked about that during the All-Star break. Like, he probably would have been a better fit just as far as personality was during the All-Star game than Goran Dragic was, who was just sort of like actually playing real basketball during the All-Star game. You know, he's not afraid of having the ball in his hands at the end of games. He's not afraid of taking a would-be game-winning shot. He's still playing defense at an all-NBA level, and the Miami Heat now are starting to push their get Richardson to the all-NBA team defense agenda right now. They're starting that campaign. So I would still say yes. I would still say he could be, like, depending on what a star is, but I'll answer it this way. I think Josh Richardson could be a top 40 player in the NBA.
I think that's absolutely fair. And I think star is debatable. Maybe he's not, you know, again, we're getting into semantics and wordplay here. He's not a superstar. I don't think he'll ever achieve that point. But he is an impactful two-way player that can do really great things. And I look at a guy like maybe somebody who's a lot larger and plays a different position, but a guy like Paul Millsap, who has been appreciated by people who follow the league, but hated by the general public. You know, like, this is a guy, he's never really been beloved. He puts up good numbers on really good teams in Atlanta, you know, Denver now. He struggled with injury, but even when he was in Utah and finding himself as a player, you know, he's always been very good. He's a really good defender, really good passer, can spread the floor a lot, can get down in the low post. He does a lot of things well. But he's not the kind of guy that screams to you as far as being a superstar. And yet he's made four All-Stars now, All-Star teams, and been part, like I said, of very winning teams, including that 62-win team from the Atlanta Hawks a couple seasons ago. So he knows how
to – I mean, and that's the second – that kind of goes into that second part, right? Will other stars want to play with him? I mean, Atlanta always had a hard time getting free agents to go to Atlanta, but Miami's not Atlanta. And if Richardson plays like a Paul Millsap type role, who is literally an all-star player, not a superstar, right? Not like the face of a Nike ad, but is playing that sort of role for a 50 plus win Heat team. Players might not be looking, you know, it might not be Chris Paul saying, I want to go play with James Harden, but it might be, you know, star player X saying, I want to go play in Miami because they've got guys like Josh Richardson. So to go to that second part of Marcus's question, would other stars want to play with him? In a way, yeah. If the team is having overall success and he's a big part of it, yeah, in that way, I could see that happening.
You know, a lot of it too is the offseason. Since he hasn't been named to an all-star team or even the Rising Stars Challenge, he's never really had the opportunity or taken advantage of what All-Star Week has to offer. And that's where a lot of the schmoozing and kind of getting to know each other takes place off the court. We saw that it had a huge impact for Miami when the Big Three kind of talked it over during Olympic play. Now, Richardson is an Olympic type player. Obviously, he's not at that level yet. I don't know that he ever will be, to be honest with you. But that's where you kind of meet players, kind of get to know them off the court, share interests, and you develop, you know, as you should, as human beings, friendships. And then you say, you know what? Not only is Josh a great player, but he's also a great person that I'd love to go to work with every day. And that's where you kind of forge those friendships where you can attract other quote-unquote stars. Now, a part of the problem is that for Richardson, I think he's a pretty quiet, down-home guy. And I don't know that he necessarily engages in that sort of thing. Like, he has a strong friendship with Justice Winslow and Tyler Johnson, and you know, they're already on the team. So he's not about to attract other players. He's also from Oklahoma. So it's not like he can go during off-season workouts and kind of say, all right, let's get a gang going in the OK. It's like, no, you know.
And then he went to college at Tennessee, right? The Tennessee pipeline's not as strong as like a Duke.
Tobias Harris, come to Miami. No, I mean, that's basically it, right?
No, so, thanks. Yeah. No.
So, you know, it, like a lot of guys get run together in Chicago. Now, that's something that's, you know, maybe Dwayne Wade could help facilitate a meeting with LeBron, and that lends to other players kind of getting involved, et cetera. You know, Chicago used to be a place where you could get a lot of, like, even back in the day where Antoine Walker used to have huge games there during the offseason. Dwayne Wade has trained there. Guys like Jabari Parker, Jahlil Okafor, and others who are from that area. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, I think.
Yeah, and you're hitting on that point there that Richardson doesn't walk in the star circles, right? He's not on banana boats. Like, he's not at All-Star game. And I'm not saying he needs to be, but as he gets better, he'll get in there. You know, Jimmy Butler was in that same position, right? Like, Kawhi Leonard was not necessarily walking in those same circles either. You know, Jimmy Butler coming from Marquette, Kawhi Leonard coming out of wherever he came from. And so
San Diego State.
San Diego State, and no, again, not big pipelines, but
I don't know about Marquette. You know, Marquette one's pretty deep, actually. Jay Crowder, Dwayne Wade,
right? But like, it's Dwayne Wade and it's Jay Crowder, right? Like, I'm just saying, it's not Kentucky, it's not Duke, it's not the big schools, you know.
That Bam Adebayo,
they forced their way into that Bam Adebayo. There you go.
That's a good guy.
In.
Yeah, that's a good end. You start like Bam starts getting workouts together with Devin Booker. Next thing you know, you're talking to him, forging a friendship, and saying, you know, D Wade's going to retire. Miami's a good place for you to come.
So what you're saying is that the Heat are going to be trading for Devin Booker within the next couple seasons.
Trading for? Yeah, absolutely. He might sign here on the cheap outright.
There you go. League minimum, just to play in the culture. Next question. Final question from our Patreon supporter exclusive mailbag comes from David. He writes in, how should Pat and Wade move forward after the season? I'd love to see a Kobe-like farewell tour. Since we have no cap space and unmovable contracts for next season, I see no problem with that approach. This is a really interesting perspective because I think most people would say, or at least you and I in this little bubble that we've created, are like, no, this is, you don't do a Wade farewell tour. And Dwayne Wade's even come out and said, I'm not
interested.
I'm not, what do you say?
I'm
not a narcissist like that. Not saying Kobe's a narcissist, but he kind of literally said Kobe was a narcissist.
Yeah. That's like accidentally breaking his nose in the All-Star game.
Exactly. So, I don't think that that's something that maybe Wade is coming out and saying he wants. I don't think that was the idea of sort of getting traded to Miami. And then if they were to sit down this offseason, I don't think that would be a requirement for him to come back and say, instead of saying like not retiring or something like that. But I think they're gonna do something. It might not be Kobe-esque. It might not be up to that.
Yeah.
It might not have all those shining lights on it, but there's gonna be something.
I don't know that any player at this point in the way that league has evolved is ever quote unquote deserving of that retirement, the farewell thing. Like the Kobe thing from everybody that you've talked to and I've talked to, it seemed like an exhausting process, not just for the front office and the coaching staff, but the players themselves. It's like every game, it doesn't matter whether we win or lose. Nobody cares about the other, 14 guys on the team. It's all about Kobe getting his love from Charlotte or Toronto or Boston or other cities like this where he's had big games. And while Dwayne Wade is a superstar player, a Hall of Fame player, possibly one of the top four shooting guards in all time.
Top three.
I guess ahead of Jerry West is where we're putting him.
Yes.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I'm going to paraphrase.
There's a lot of hype right now around James Harden elevating to third. Can we cool it? Like, wait until he wins something on James Harden, people. James Harden's not the third best shooting guard in the league, and I'm starting to hear that more and more. Just wanted to get that out there. It's really frustrating. Dwayne Wade is number three. Let's not forget how good he was.
Yeah, no, I that's fair.
Sorry, I got really heated for a second. I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. They kind of paraphrased, Draymond Green when he was yapping at Paul Pierce. You're not Kobe. Nobody love you like that. Right. So I don't know that Dwayne Wade. Look, part of the thing also is that Dwayne's changed the narrative a little bit, kind of now that he's older and kind of the elder statement, and he's kind of been beaten up in between Chicago and Cleveland, et cetera. But I think he's pretty largely despised by a lot of fan bases. Like, his play has been bordering on cheap for many, many years during his prime. The fact that he teamed together with LeBron James for one of the most hated teams, even though they were also beloved by Heat fans in the big three, I think that really works against him. He couldn't go to other teams and demand them to love him. Like, he's been a role player now. Kobe, as much as he was bedraggled through the last couple of seasons where he couldn't really score much and he was going through this myriad number of injuries and everything else, he was still Kobe Bryant. So I think he had the commercials and the appeal.
He's still the number one option.
Yeah, I mean, well, he kind of forced himself to be because that's Kobe Bryant.
Well, that's a key point, right? Because I think part of the farewell tour, it's more than just like the tributes on the Jumbotrons and stuff like that. It's, no, this is literally still Kobe's team, and it's going to be Kobe's team until he drops 60 in his last game and retires off into the sunset. That's what it's going to be here. And you're right. Like, Wade has retreated into a role player position right now. He's not the number one. He's not even necessarily the number two option. I mean, outside of the last couple minutes of a game when the Heat just go to him. And that's really just out of habit, and Spoelstra's admitted that. So it's not going to be to that same effect. Whatever this farewell tour is, however we define Kobe's farewell tour, it's not going to be that. It might actually end up being something closer to what Tim Duncan did, which is one day he's just like, I'm done playing.
Look,
and that'll be it, which would be a really strange, if you would have asked during that big three era, how will Wade go out? Will it be closer to Kobe's farewell tour or if Tim Duncan's like faxed in voicemail or whatever to say I'm done? A lot of people would have said it was closer to Kobe, but at this point in Wade's career, it might be even closer to the Duncan thing.
Like, to me, and maybe this is for the other David who wrote this question in to think about, is, do you want 41 home games of just demanding Wade, et cetera, and kind of showering him with praise, throwing gifts and presents and things around the league? Do we want to see that, or would we rather see a playoff game next season where the series is going to end, Wade steps onto the American Airlines arena floor for the last time and just gets 5 minutes, or steps off for the last time and gets 5 minutes of just absolute love and incessant clapping his way? Yeah. Like, that's, to me, a more emotional moment than kind of reliving all of his plays at every city. You know, that's the other thing too, is, I kind of hinted at this before, but Kobe's had big games almost at every franchise, I guess every franchise and in every city. So there's memories there. And even still, it's the legend, part of which Kobe has helped build up himself, that kind of feeds into it. He's Kobe. He's the Black Mamba. D Wade is D Wade. That doesn't exactly inspire or ever inspired the same kind of level of fear that a Kobe Bryant did. So I don't know that he can go to, Houston, let's say, and then people are going to be like, oh, no, we've got our shooting guard. Thanks. We don't really want to clap too much for D Wade at 37.
Yeah, I think there's also just a league-wide malaise after the Kobe farewell tour that everybody's still trying to get over, because it was exhausting for everybody. And just I'm against it. Like I'm against LeBron the tribute viewers. I don't want LeBron. Yeah, probably, I guess, unless he goes to the Lakers and wins two championships there. Like,
oh, can we the Lakers? Maybe with the Spurs, not with the Lakers.
Philadelphia. All right. Before we move on to the final segment, which is going to be an interview, a conversation that David had with Tim Hardaway, Heat legend Tim Hardaway. Let's go to iTunes first and see if we have any new reviews. David.
Yeah. We've wrapped up at 94 reviews for the month of February, so we fell just a little bit short of the 100 quota that we were hoping to reach. But that doesn't mean that, you know, listeners can't take a minute in the future, hop on, leave us a 5-star review like this one that we got from Miami Maniac 27, who writes, "Love the podcast. Just recently started listening to it. Finding one on the Heat was a must. Always great content and insight on the team." So a guy like Miami Maniac 27, like Miami Maniac 27, finding the podcast, that's where really what we're trying to reach. And that's why we are asking everybody to send in these reviews, because it really does help new listeners find the podcast and again, hopefully listen to the great content that Wes and I put together.
That's going to be it for us today, but we're going to play you a conversation with Tim Hardaway. Hardaway, who played in Miami in the late 90s, was one of the original great Heat players. Now he's an assistant coach with the Detroit Pistons. David, you had a chance to talk with him when the Pistons came to Florida.
That's right. During Shoot Around in Orlando, he was very open to talking about the Heat, nothing but great memories of his time here. Even though we heard about things getting a little rocky with Pat Riley at the end, you could really see that there was a deep level of admiration, not just for those teams he played on, but for the franchise, the city, and everything else. And he was absolutely hilarious. I talked to him about the matchup between the Pistons and the Heat, what we had to look forward to there. He thought the Pistons could match up with anybody. It didn't turn out that way for them against Orlando or the Miami Heat. But at the same time, he's really working hard there with the Pistons. His job is kind of like to take everything, keep it light, because the players kind of need that release valve, I think, especially in contrast to the high pressure that Stan Van Gundy puts on himself and everybody else around that franchise. So having a guy like Hardaway is necessary. But he was just a lot of fun to talk to go over some of his fond memories about his time with Miami and what he could look forward to as far as his teams in the future.
So let's go ahead and play that right now.
How you doing, first of all?
I'm great. I can't complain. You know, back in the beautiful sunshine.
Yeah. Do you have any particular memories about your time in Miami that you recollect the most?
Man, I get all fun memories of Miami. You know, it's all fun memories. It's not one. You know, losing the playoffs, that's probably the painful ones. But other than that, it's all fun memories with the organization, with the city, with the fans, with friends there. I have not one bad thing to say.
Is that your regret then, that you weren't able to go further and deeper into the playoffs?
Yeah, that's just one regret I have, that we wasn't able to bring a championship there when we was playing there. We was close. Eastern Conference Finals, up there, fighting to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and playing in the championship. But, you know, I got none but fond memories.
Yeah, and obviously, you're associated with Pat Riley when he was the coach there. What are your memories of Riles as the head coach of the team?
First of all, great human being. Second of all, always prepared. Had the team prepared. I enjoyed watching him get us prepared to play games in practice, at shoot arounds, in film sessions, his charisma and how he worked so hard to have the culture there that is there today. No nonsense. We're going to come play. You got to be in shape. You got to be ready to go and play with a lot of confidence. And that's why I like watching them play today, man. It's fun watching them play. And that's the way it is.
You see a lot of same qualities from Riley and Spoelstra. I know he was just an assistant, so you didn't really know him all that well, right?
Well, you know, the game has changed.
Yeah, sure.
The game has changed. Players have changed. So you can't do a lot of things that we used to do in practice or in games or You know, you just can't do a lot of things. But I see, I mean, like, you know, you can't beat up folks. We used to beat up folks in the 90s. You know, you used to get smacked around in the 90s. We used to practice 2.5 hours. That was good. To me, it was cool. At times, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people, when we thought we didn't need it, we needed it. But you can't do that right now. But I see the same qualities. Eric always been a hard worker. He was my film guy. Put film cassettes in my chair. He always worked hard, and you know, and that's why they play hard. He knows the game inside and out.
You think the game would be better if some of those elements you talked about would be back? If guys practice harder, and maybe it was a little bit more physical.
Well, yeah, you know, not physical on the court, but practice.
Yeah.
If the guys practice, then I think it'd be a lot less injuries.
Yeah.
If they practice. So that's just me.
Obviously, your partnership with Alonzo Mourning is one of the things that Heat fans remember best. What are your thoughts about Alonzo, his Hall of Fame career, and playing alongside him for so many years?
His intensity out there on the court. Always wanted to be perfect. And shoot around, practice. He missed a jump hook. He go get the ball, and he shoots that jump hook until he makes it so he could be perfect. Jump shots, he make it when he miss. Free throws. You know, he just worked on his game constantly. And to be a better pro, a better player, help his teammates out, help his team out. So it was just fun playing with a big man like that I could throw it to and know that he going to produce for you.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts on the team this year? I know you probably got your hands full with this one. But.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I look at them. You know, they always in the game. You know, they always put themselves in the position to be in the game. You know, and that's just because they love to play the game. They love to play. It don't matter what the matchups are. They come out and play hard each and every day, and they give themselves a chance to win.
That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of tonight's game against the Suns. You could send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedontheheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.